Welcome to Canuck as a Slur, a podcast about cool, curth, curious, and cringe Canadian history and culture. My name is Kelly, and joining me today, making her long-awaited return to the BUP feed, is a podcaster in recovery, erstwhile host of both A Hill to Die On and Australian Gothic, Josie Spicer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on. So last time you were on the show, which was mostly to record Cowboy Erotica, you'd prepared an oral presentation on what at the time was the most recent Australian federal election. Correct. And that presentation was entitled Shit Cunts Who Lost Their Seats.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, if I'm not mistaken, your home state of Queensland just had its own elections, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Did any shit cunts lose their seats? How'd that go?
Oh, shit cunts gained so many seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we only have one house in Queensland as well. So basically whoever has the majority government here gets to do whatever they want for the next 4 years.
Is that unique to Australian states or?
To Queensland.
Yeah, sorry. In the context of Australian states, that's unique to Queensland?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I think all of the provincial legislatures here are one house, but I could be wrong. I know ours is.
That's terrifying.
I guess. I mean, our Senate, like the federal Senate is very, and we actually already talked about this last time, but it's very like House of Lordsy, like it's all by appointment. And But we're not here to talk about legislatures.
Yeah, sorry.
So going from your often upsetting home turf, we're here to talk about my often upsetting home turf. And that's the province of Alberta and specifically the city of Edmonton. So going into this, what, if anything, did you know about Edmonton?
Not a lot, except that the other day I listened to a kind of long form podcast that was based sort of in Edmonton. Or at least that's where the woman went missing. In her defense, 50th Street.
Yeah, that was the true crime one that somebody was posting about on your Discord, right?
Correct, yeah. And it was really good. It's depressing, but I would recommend the listen. It was very respectful.
Yeah, okay. I should check that out. And that's pretty much it. You know that someone disappeared here?
Yes, that's all.
Oh, boy. There was also, if people want more Edmonton listing, there was an episode long time ago of Last Podcast on the Left where they covered the Dexter copycat wannabe serial killer who killed one guy.
Oh, so he was not very good at it.
No, he was unsuccessful. Honestly, we could not get into that. It is a whole thing, but it is
okay.
It is an interesting listen, although I believe for that show, you have to say like scandal noted because didn't one of the hosts turn out to be a bad dude?
Oh, with all due respect to you, Kelly, dude podcasters wouldn't trust him just as a standard.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they specifically kicked a guy off. I don't know.
I think there was something probably, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, but that's again into the weeds, so. The reason we're talking about Edmonton today is because it's the setting of our topic today, the 2007 film Christmas in Wonderland. So what was your overall impression of the movie?
Sort of like bootleg Home Alone, but set in West Edmonton Mall is how I would characterize it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Before we get into the specifics of the movie, for many viewers and listeners, they're going to be unfamiliar with the city. So we're going to do my best attempt at a surface level answer to the question, what is Edmonton? So Edmonton finds itself in the Treaty 6 area of Canada's numbered treaty system between the government and Indigenous groups, which is some very fraught history that will eventually be its own topic. As mentioned in our land acknowledgement for the show, the area has been traditionally known as Amiskwetsiwaskaiken, meaning Beaver Hills House, referring to the general area of Amiskwetsis or Beaver Hills in the Cree language, or at least the Plains Cree dialect, I believe. Cree, while we're at it, is a colonial term, originally a misapplication of a different Indigenous word by early French settlers. Endonyms, so like self-referential terms, for the Cree alone can vary, and because we're really talking about, even in that sense, quite a few different groups of people. But in my best attempt to use the different groups of people's own words, Edmonton is in the traditional territory of the Nehiyuwek, commonly known as the Cree, Nakota, commonly known as the Stoney, Nitsitapi, commonly known as the Blackfoot, Nakawe, commonly known as the Saulteaux, the Métis people and other nations, and even that is still a massive oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
So beginning in 1795, the Hudson's Bay Company established a series of trading posts under the name Fort Edmonton, named after a boring place in England no one cares about. All of them were, very broadly speaking, in the same general area along the North Saskatchewan River and its tributaries. And the North Saskatchewan River would also be more accurately called, and I haven't tried this one out loud yet, Kisiskatsiwanisipi. That might be horrible, but that means swift current in Cree. The river and the fort were both very much tied to the fur trade, and the final site of Fort Edmonton, which was established in 1830, eventually evolved into the city as we know it today. The site officially became a town in 1892, a city in 1904, and the capital of the newly formed province of Alberta in 1905. But what really created the Edmonton and the Alberta of the modern day was the development of everyone's favorite industry, oil.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah, the petroleum industry, far too big of a topic to get into, but it's essentially the reason that like Alberta developed into a wealthy province with two major cities in it. This is kind of just offhand knowledge, but I believe a lot more of like the headquarters, like the corporate homes of the oil companies tend to be in Calgary. The refineries are all in Edmonton, and the oil sands themselves are largely further north up in Fort McMurray. So Edmonton is also kind of the gateway north to where the actual extraction is done.
Right. Yeah. So much of this, I'm just like, oh, I can like picture an exact parallel in Australia. Like,
I was going to say maybe almost kind of like Western Australia with the mining, or is there a better?
Yeah. Even in my own state, you've got Cairns, or where my research is based, there's like Newcastle, which is like a city in its own right, but like, and that's sort of where all the industry is, but all the money sort of goes to other cities within the state.
Yeah. Like, and there's a lot of commuting. Like, even I have been at mm-hmm. one point when I was very young, a person who lived in Edmonton and like drove up to Fort McMurray to work and then back down.
Yeah. A lot of that.
Yeah. So as you can kind of imagine, this leads to having a city where a lot of people come to work blue collar jobs for lots of money. It's not especially, at least in my opinion, conducive to becoming known, you know, nationally or internationally as a city with like big cultural contributions to the world. There's like, I would say almost half a dozen famous people from here. You've got, I mean, outside of hockey players, just from memory, you got Michael J. Fox is from here. Katie Lang is from here musically. Nathan Fillion.
Oh.
If you're a huge nerd, Mark Meer, who is the voice of the male Shepard in Mass Effect, he was like a local improv actor that they got him to record the character's voice as a placeholder, and they decided they liked him, and they just kept him.
So pulling out the big guns from Edmonton.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it. And then like the next most famous people I can name like off the top of my head who are not hockey players or politicians would be like, well, there's that guy who killed people. Mm-hmm. Or the one person. And then there was a guy in my high school who killed three people. And it doesn't get any better, I don't think, from there. So
sorry.
Yeah. That's another story for another day.
I'm just dropping that. All right. That's kicking that down the line. Got it.
Yeah. It was a whole thing.
Holy dooly.
Just a few other pieces of miscellany. Edmonton is the northernmost major city in Canada in a context where 90% of the population lives within 160 kilometers of the U.S. border. We're 3 hours north of Calgary, which is much more in that like band of like everyone is huddled around the border here.
Right.
So Edmonton has been called the gateway to the north. And every summer, the city hosts Klondike Days, an otherwise generic fair with the occasional coat of paint to commemorate, as I've seen others so aptly put it, that the Klondike Gold Rush happened somewhere else. But people, you know, they came through here to buy their pickaxes. So.
Right. Which is where that's important. That's significant.
It's something. But like even the city couldn't really commit to the theme. Like they dropped it after a while because everyone felt it was corny. And so they were like, okay, we're going to rebrand our annual fair. And they were named it to Capital X because like it's the Capital City Exposition. Yeah, it's super generic. And then everyone was really bummed out by that. So they renamed it back to Klondike Days. So.
I think it's more fun to like be like, it's called this, but it's not really.
Yeah.
Like that's ahistorical. I think that's better.
Well, and the generic rebrand will also come back in a second, so.
Okay.
So, although urban Edmontonians skew a little more progressive than their counterparts in Calgary and an order of magnitude more than rural Albertans, Edmonton itself is still very much a city built by the whims of people who love tax breaks, hate public transit, and are addicted to compromise.
I think that's going to do really well for just town planning in general.
Yeah, the next bullet point is Edmonton's role as the place that urban planning and design go to die.
Do you have like an example of like a building or a project? Is West Edmonton Mall one of those?
Well, so here's what I have. This role as this kind of land that urban planning forgot has been put on blast by even our own three-term mayor. Upon his initial election in 2005, referring to our proud tradition of endless bleak concrete Soviet block-coated buildings, Stephen Mandel pledged to his citizens, no more crap.
No more crap. Amazing.
Yeah, that will get referred to repeatedly when you try to look up like articles about him, that he had the mm-hmm. no more crap speech. I couldn't find the speech itself, but I did find one quote. This is Yahoo News quoting the Edmonton Journal. So here's what he said. The time has passed when square boxes with minimal features and lame landscaping are acceptable. Our tolerance for crap is now zero.
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
For a pretty good example, honestly, I'll just take a picture outside of the window of this apartment I'm in right now.
Uh-oh.
I would say this photo is pretty emblematic.
I think that's cute.
Yeah.
Am I delusional?
I don't know.
Like, it's giving Soviet. I see it. Like. Yeah. If it was covered in like a light blanket of snow, yeah, I wouldn't know where I am.
Yeah. And I mean, it used to snow here, actually, but.
That is one of my questions that I have for you is, does it snow in Edmonton? Did it ever snow in Edmonton? And does it snow at Christmas?
Oh, yeah. When I was a child, so like late 90s, early 2000s, I absolutely remember designing Halloween costumes around like having to fit over a snowsuit.
Wow.
And then I think last year was the first year we had like pretty unequivocally just no snow on Christmas.
Oh, that's not good. I don't think that bodes well generally.
I'm starting to think climate change is bad.
Sorry, that's just so interesting because like, as we'll talk about in a second, one of the things that they mention once or twice in Christmas in Wonderland is that there's like no snow this Christmas.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, is that because like, obviously I have no snow ever at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I also have a very simplified view of Canadian Christmas, which I just assumed was white always.
I mean, in 2007, yeah, I would say anywhere but Vancouver because of its coastal climate, like you're getting mm-hmm. snow on Christmas. That was just
right.
a given.
So at the time, that would be a weird thing, whereas you're just like, yeah, no, we don't.
Yeah, it fits into the story, but I think it's also convenient cover for the fact that they were shooting in March or something like that.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
Because I thought that had to have some sort of significance to the plot, because I'm like, why would you mention it? But yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think it's convenient and also helps with their plot. So
yeah, yeah.
So for the city itself, as someone who's unfortunately spent most of my life here, I'll be the first to admit that, bless its heart, Edmonton is at least trying these days. And like in the background of that picture, like the buildings that you can see that have glass in them, like those are newer.
Oh.
We finally discovered glass around like 2009.
Right. Okay.
Like that big ass tall building is like 10 years old or something like that.
It's yeah,
not that new.
Yeah.
Or not that old.
Whereas the one sort of in the mid section that would have been like a classic sort of thing where it's just like
yeah.
ordinary windows.
A lot of beige concrete is what right. the city has been built out of historically. But yeah, it's at least trying. And, you know, sure, despite the recent light rail expansion, the train still barely goes anywhere. And sure, the city may not be walkable or bikeable either. But I'll say this, in all fairness, it sucks ass to drive into.
Great. So just like, do you think because it is just sort of that gateway thing that no one really had a long-term vision for it when it was being built up?
I think a lot of places certainly in kind of the middle western chunk of North America, they really were built at a time when society was the most car-pilled because it was like the 50s, we're pulling up oil, the car was that symbol of like personal freedom and everything. I mean, we've also ripped up infrastructure, right? Like there used to be a streetcar here downtown that got ripped out.
Oh, it's Brisbane.
It's now like a token streetcar that goes like kind of just across the river a little bit that you ride as like a little activity.
Yeah, if you're in Edmonton for the day, you can do that.
Yeah, there used to be rail service between Edmonton and Calgary. There is not anymore.
What?
I mean, that got taken out in like the 50s, I think, or a long time ago.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
This is like Elon Musk's dream.
It is very much so. But I mean, you get echoes of the same thing in Australia. Like I went from Perth to Adelaide to Sydney, and oh, no. I only got on a train on like halfway from Adelaide to Sydney, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of the same problems.
Just out of curiosity, not at all relevant. Is there any high speed rail in Canada?
No. And there should be. I mean,
yeah, same with Australia.
I think that will have to be an episode someday, because
get a train nerd on.
Yeah, I'm so mad about it. And no, I have to save all of that for later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Make sure you write these down for like episode ideas. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
It's,
yeah.
Again, it's so funny to me how like obviously the USA has so many parallels to Australia and we try to emulate the USA, but Canada, it really is just like copy paste. I don't know what if it's like because it was part of the Commonwealth or is part of the Commonwealth for longer. There's just so much of it that just smells of this place.
There's something of the colonial mindset that just happens, I think.
It lingers. There's no, because there was no like revolution or anything. So it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just so similar.
And one thing you can't deny, you would be hard pressed to find a city with a nicer pile of silver metal balls next to a freeway. If I had slides, I'd put it up right now. Yeah, you can look up, I'll put it in the edit, but you can look up the Talus Dome, T-A-L-U-S, and you'll see our wonderful pile of balls. It was one of those things. This has existed in a few places. Like I remember seeing some very odd kind of arbitrary looking statues. I think it was in Seoul and someone was explaining to me, you know, there was basically a city ordinance that, you know, all these new developments have to come with an according piece of public art.
Hmm.
And they very much had that here. So when they did this, I think it was when they expanded the bridge across the river there, they were like, you have to have a piece of public art. So they commissioned the balls and
that's disgusting.
I have Stockholm syndrome for the balls.
Oh no. Whatever the thing is, you know, where a lot of people claim that they have it. I've long had it. The thing where you don't like spheres that are like spaced.
Oh yeah. Way, there's like a phobia.
That makes you, it looks like a pigeon neck. I can't look at pigeons cause it makes me, my mouth water. Like I'm going to vomit. And that statue, that sculpture is pigeon neck. That's all I can see. Your pigeons might be different, but ours have like dots on their neck. Hate it. Sorry. Fucking hell. I meant spotted dove. I'm so sorry. This won't happen again. Hate Edmonton.
It has drawn a lot of ire, but I have just developed a love for it out of necessity.
I understand.
And a guy got stuck in there at one point and they had to like use in the emergency escape. Yeah, because you can get under the pile of balls. And I think they're like the firefighters had to like access this like emergency escape hatch that I think was built into it.
Well, that guy, basically, for people like him.
Well, I think it was built on the statue because they knew that people would try to climb into it. But yeah, a guy got stuck in there for sure.
God. Edmonton sounds so fucking bleak. I'm so sorry.
This is why I'm leaving. I'm so excited to be
leaving. Where are you leaving to?
Out of Alberta.
Out of Alberta.
Yeah, my plan is to do some traveling to Eastern Canada, which I've almost never visited, and then look at some like European work visas and
nice.
Yeah, kind of treat this as my full-time job and see where that gets me.
Hell yeah.
So support the Patreon if you're listening, because it's going to become my only income after this week.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But the 1980s were a big time for Edmonton. The arrival of noted hockey player Wayne Gretzky led to a slew of Stanley Cup championships at a time when the local Canadian football team, which is thankfully no longer named after a pejorative term for an ethnic group that Australians still love to use for their coolers, was also... You know about that one, right?
I know that one.
But they renamed the football team. It's fine.
I call it a cooler now.
Yeah, that's nice. That one at least is a bit more contentious. Like, it's not this... It doesn't have the same level, as I understand, of slur that, like, words that were developed just to be pejoratives.
Right.
It was sort of more of a misnomer that came from other languages. And I was doing a bit of Googling on this before, like earlier today. What the word actually means depends on which language you trace the etymology through. So, But the point being that people said, please stop using this. And they did actually, I was quite surprised, rename the team. And people were mad about it, and everyone will have forgotten in 5 years. So,
what's the name now?
They renamed it to the Elks so that you could keep the E and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
That's fine. Yeah. So the team was also winning a bunch at the time. And I found some kind of mixed explanations on this. It's not incredibly well documented, but the story that I get from people generally on Reddit online seems to be that the term City of Champions was being used in a sports context and kind of like a media context for a few years, but it really got popularized by our mayor. He said it in this like tearful press conference referring to the city he was referring to the city's response to being hit by this deadly tornado in 1987.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. It killed like tornadoes are not common here. It's the only one I think that's ever really hit the city itself. And it killed I want to say like 30 some people. So
that's pretty devastating.
Yeah. It's not like a tsunami or anything, but it's about as bad of a natural disaster as you tend to get up here.
And like, if you're not at all prepared for it, I'm sure your infrastructure was absolutely not prepared. It seems not prepared for anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really shocking. Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's a topic I'll cover at some point. But either way, the City of Champions became the city's official slogan soon after. And over the years, it became at least understood widely to be a sports reference. And as the city's teams continued to be actually quite bad at sports for much of the ensuing decades, there actually grew a concerted effort to change the slogan. And like,
sorry, that's just like some beautiful self-awareness. Like, we're not really champions.
Yeah. And like people would say like, oh yeah, it was not just named for the Oilers and their Stanley Cups. Like it was named for all the teams and even these little minor whatever. And like, well, probably a lot of those minor teams continue to be okay. It was mostly just that the Oilers in particular were so bad that we started to feel really embarrassed, I think.
That's cute.
I mean, in my opinion, having a city slogan is just such a cosmetic thing. It's really, really low stakes. So they're all going to be silly. If you've picked the City of Champions, regardless of why, you can just make it mean the context of we have the hearts of champions. We recover from things. Like just make that.
You just say anything.
Do a big PR about it.
Yeah.
But what happened was in 2015, City Council was like, all right, no, we're doing it. They took down the City of Champions, which was on all of the signs on the entrances to the city at like various points. They took all of that down, and there was, I don't know exactly if they had a public naming contest, but they were like looking for public outreach. Like, what should a new slogan be? What's the future going to be? And what we finally got was, I don't know if people voted on this. I don't think they did. I think it was just nothing good came up, and so the council went with this. Let me see if I can get a picture, because that's going to be a funnier reveal.
It just is so beautiful to me, though, that like the amount of money they would have spent on that rebranding when they can't even there's probably not a lot of green space in Edmonton. Just a hazard, I guess. I don't know.
Walkable,
like that you can walk to and around living spaces. Am I wrong? I'd be happy to be wrong.
It is not walkable in terms of getting from point A to point B.
Okay.
Here downtown is all right. You can walk to a lot of places. Kind of the other side of the river, which is like the not so downtown, it was like the downtown of a smaller city that got annexed, is like walkable if you're exactly along that avenue, like White Avenue. But it's so hard to almost get anywhere. With that being said, in terms of green spaces, so where we're built here is, if you compare it to somewhere like Calgary, which is like, it's a very low-lying river and, you know, prone to flooding, as you'll be familiar with. not as prone to flooding as Brisbane.
Okay.
There was one big flood in Calgary, but like their river area is very walkable because everything's built to water level, basically. You have all these pedestrian bridges and stuff. And here, the river valley is much steeper because you are we're not even closer to the mountains. It's just a steeper river valley. So that's good for flood resistance. It's also good for rich people who have built their houses on the like edges of the embankments to be losing their decks and stuff to erosion. If you like canoe down the river, you can look at people's like collapsed backyards, and then they're trying to build like retaining walls and stuff. But it means that even if you are starting from a clean slate and wanting to do good urban planning, you have a very steep river valley, which means your bridges need to be longer and you can't build roads very well in the middle. So it's very annoying to cross the river by car. It's also annoying by foot. But the the actual river valley is, I believe it's the longest contiguous urban green space in the world.
What?
Because there is a park system that runs through the entire length of the city that is unbroken because it's all this natural river valley that you can't really urbanize.
That is so good.
Right. But not for like lack of trying, I would say.
Right. To make it. Of course.
I've always said that like the best part of Edmonton is the part where they didn't put any Edmonton. They just left the nature there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
So at one point, at least you could do a full cycle, like from one border of the city to the other, just by like continuing through all these, like there's one unbroken bike path, but at least part of it, I know in recent years has also been like has fallen victim to its own erosion. So
Jesus.
Yeah. I don't have a perfect answer on what the like plan is there, but they have to deal with erosion now. They've had like collapsing pathways around the kind of river areas. So, but very beautiful green space.
It sounds like if you want a job, maybe being a structural engineer to the rich people in Edmonton is an option because they're retaining
probably
walls
and
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just some career advice from yours truly, maybe.
Yeah. So here is a new example. This is the successful rebrand from the City of Champions.
What?
Yeah. So for people listening, the new slogan is Alberta's capital city.
Welcome to the City of Edmonton, Alberta's capital city. Well, they're not wrong, I guess. I hope they're not wrong.
I believe. So here's like another example where it's hard to tell to places on a timeline. Like this was a thing I would have spent more time researching if I hadn't written like all of these notes this morning. I think some people basically renegade put up their own versions back up in protest. This one looks pretty official. I don't know. There's been a lot of back and forth because people are not like no one is happy with the rebrand. And why would you be?
No, it's shitty. Like City of Champions, as you say, who cares? Make up a reason. You could just say whatever.
Yeah, it sounds nice. Now, I personally think that a really good community slogan that would have been relevant and punchy would have just been no more crap.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, the mayor said it. It's relevant. Like, put that on the sign. That would be way
better. It's a bit edgy. Yeah, I like that. No more crap.
But Edmonton's real crowning achievement came in 1981 with the opening of West Edmonton Mall. By the time its third phase was...
Sorry.
What?
It is a place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, did you not realize it was a real place?
That was one of my questions. I didn't know if West Edmonton Mall was real.
It is. So I don't know. They opened the first phase in 1981, and I don't know if it counted then, but by the time they opened the third phase in 1985, it was definitely the largest shopping center on planet Earth.
Oh my God.
That was our municipal claim to fame for a long time. So whenever you actually are comparing shopping centers, it does get into a bit of a granular debate over how do you measure it? Do you measure it by number of stores? Do you measure it by store area? Do you measure the whole thing by square footage or cubic footage? So the rankings change based on that, but basically it is no longer the largest. It stopped being that in 2004 because they built a huge mall in Beijing, although a lot of people say it's like empty.
Another parallel here. Mm. So I'm in Brisbane. I live sort of near
the City
Westfield
of
Chermside
yeah.
Shops, City of Champions, Westfield Chermside, which was the supposedly the largest shopping center. I don't know if they said in Australia or the Southern Hemisphere, but again, you have people be like, well, is that just by like how long it takes you to get from one end to the other? There's like, and they had this whole thing. We're no longer the biggest shopping center in the Southern Hemisphere though. So I feel you.
Yeah. Cause I know one of the bigger ones, I have a list here. Yeah. World's largest shopping centers. It's in this tab. You've got, so this was, even this is, in an Internet Archive page. So this is like 12 years old. The biggest ones listed are both in China. One's in Dongguan, one's in Beijing. Then you have one in a place called Pasay City in the Philippines, which that's definitely Southern Hemisphere, right?
Yeah.
So that might be the one that overtook you. And then of course you have the Dubai Mall. That makes sense.
Yes. And also people can just say that it's the biggest mall and no one's really going to fact check unless you're like that specific type of person. Which is who I am. But yeah, so West Edmonton Mall, does it actually have a water park in it?
Yes. So that's what kind of gets you into these questions of like, well, what is a mall if I build it around like an entertainment complex, right? Like if you built a water park across the street from the mall, that's not that different. But if you now put the water park inside the mall, even though you haven't added more stores, now your mall is bigger. So like what is a mall if you're going to measure it, right? But yeah, the water park is fully enclosed in the mall. Absolutely.
I can't believe that. I thought that was fake. I was like, that's gotta be fake. There's no way.
No. I mean, honestly, as like I don't like malls, and you could probably get into all kinds of debates over like is a water park, I don't know. There's probably criticisms of water parks, right? They're wastes of energy, they're unsanitary, they're whatever.
Oh, I'm sure I could come up
Probably. But that
with
being
why
said,
they're
like
not good.
it's a fucking sweet water park. It's got a wave pool, it's got these huge
Hell yeah.
slides. They added this one slide over time where it's one of those ones. I'm sure they have these in a lot of places, but they have like the hatch in the floor and that drops a hatch under you and you just
Yes.
drop and you do the full loop the loop. Although I think they had a problem with somebody getting stuck in it. I can't remember.
Inside a shopping center as well.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah. That is so gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'd be proud of that too, Edmonton.
Yeah. Like it's something. It's at least an interesting mall. It's more interesting than most malls, which are just like, would you like to buy some fast fashion and like crappy purses? At least a water park is a real experience.
Also, like for the teenagers, like going to the shops is like the one of the few things that you can do as a teenager, at least here.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sick.
Which I did find kind of funny that when we get into the actual plot of the movie, the teenager's like, oh, I don't want to go to the mall. The mall sucks. And I'm like, well, come on. When I was a teenager, we went to the shitty mall where I lived, and that was just a thing you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few others have surpassed it in various metrics, but it is still as big as it was. It is a massive, massive fuck off mall. And somebody at some point, and this is where it gets tricky because I tried to look into the production of this movie and I didn't quite get as granular as like trying to limit my Google search to like, 2006, 2007. But really, there's just nothing I could find written about it. Like, no one has talked about this movie, which comes from somebody deciding at some point, well, we need a movie that is shot and set in West Edmonton Mall, which is what we're here to talk about today, the 2007 film, Christmas in Wonderland.
Yes. And just off the top of it, I assumed it was going to be some sort of point of national pride, this film, because I was like, oh,
No.
maybe some of these actors are Canadian. No, I don't think so. At least like not the ones you know of, right? Like,
Yeah. And we'll get into the actor list because I got a little bit rabbit holed trying to.
I have
I
questions.
was surprised by some of it. Yeah, a lot of this movie raises so many questions. But what's crazy about it is that I grew up in and around the city basically for my whole life, at least until the movie came out. I don't remember any news about this being made. I don't remember anyone talking about
What?
it. I do remember because I like read the newspaper as a kid. I would read the comics, but I'd also read the newspaper, and I remember a big feature on how they were shooting scenes for the Dane Cook movie, Good Luck Chuck.
Oh, was that filmed in Edmonton?
They filmed parts of it there, and I believe parts of it in Vancouver. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of film production has been in Vancouver for a while and has been increasingly in Calgary.
Right.
But yeah, nothing gets shot in Edmonton. The reason they shot scenes from Good Luck Chuck here was because Jessica Alba's character was a penguin trainer.
Yes.
And there have been penguins at the mall here. So there's like, they used the mall infrastructure for the penguins. Yeah.
Right. So okay, of course, 'cause so the aquarium in the mall is also a thing.
It's very much a thing. Yeah. It's also a thing to jump from the second floor balcony into the like aquarium.
What?
Well, not the aquarium, but more of the open water spaces. Like the water space continues through multiple sections of the mall.
Okay, this does sound pretty sick.
Yeah, well, they used to have little submarines that went underwater, and then they
What?
decommissioned. Yeah, you could ride the submarines around. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. This does sound like a pretty objectively cool shopping center.
All right. Well, do you want me to ruin this for you right now?
Yes.
Because you also covered are aquariums ethical on your now mothballed show.
Yes.
Do you want to give the simple answer to that, or for people who haven't listened to it?
Simple answer is that not really, but there are ways that it can be done better.
Right. So here's what happened with the dolphins in West Edmonton Mall.
Oh no. Oh no.
So this is from a wiki called Captive Cetaceans. Four wild-caught Atlantic bottlenose dolphins were imported to the mall from Florida in 1985. The dolphins gave birth to five either stillborn or quickly deceased calves throughout their years in captivity at the mall. The last dolphin, Howard, was transferred to Theater of the Sea in 2004 and passed 1 year later.
Oh, so they weren't... That mall aquarium not conducive to life.
Yeah. Well, and as their dolphins were dying, and in fairness, I believe they lived about 20 years, which is actually kind of in line with their lifespan.
Oh.
But because the calves were not surviving, the mall said, like, we are absolutely not going to replace these dolphins with more dolphins. And like, they couldn't release them. They were like, we can't just like throw them into the wild. We don't know how to do dolphin rehabilitation that way. So there was at least a like, okay, our bad. But yeah, they had dolphins performing in the mall, and it was just not a great idea.
I mean, I'm glad they didn't replace them, I guess. It's like,
yeah, they replaced them with three sea lions instead.
Okay, I should have assumed there was something, right? Like, yeah. They're like, oh, we're gonna get something in here. What hasn't died on our watch yet?
Yeah, I believe they still have the sea lion shows.
Oh, and that was in the film too, the sea lions.
Yeah, so they would have been replaced by then, because the film is from 2000. Well, they're released in 2007, and the last dolphin was shipped out in 2004, and I think quickly replaced with sea lions.
Oh, that's a bummer. But I'm also not I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
I just hadn't really thought about it, because again, I wasn't even convinced that West Edmonton Mall was this place, like at like had all the things that it did in this film.
It sounds a bit made up. Yeah,
it sounds so fake.
So it's a pretty odd choice of setting. And oh, just to hammer home that point about, like, we hadn't heard of this movie. I was introduced to this movie in 2020. That's when I first heard of it.
What?
Nobody knows about this movie. Like, I have explained this to...
No one in your town was talking about it.
Nobody's seen it.
That is baffling.
It was a roommate I had... we don't have a good word for this in Canada, so I've just stolen the word share house, and people don't understand what I mean, but that's what it is. Oh. A group of people living in like a house together.
Yeah.
And one of them was like, it's Christmas. Let's watch this. And I was like, you're making up this movie. This is not real. And we watched it and I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Cause you would recognize all the places, right?
Yeah. And so that is the person that I had to like try to, we were emailing for access, because this was being passed like hand to hand, this like crappy low res quality of the movie.
That is so wild.
Yeah. And so I believe there is, I mean, obviously you and I obtained it very legally and paid money for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a way to watch it legally online. If there's not, I don't know, hop in the Discord and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, you can ask us personally for...
directions to buy it, obviously, yeah.
Directions to buy it. Yeah, we'll look together.
So yeah, her contention was like, we should have screenings of this in the city like people screened The Room. And I totally agree. I think
absolutely
that should be done. So I don't know. This is the beginning of my awareness campaign for this movie.
That would be so fun to do that. Because I really think at this point, we haven't made it clear. The reason that it's so bizarre, especially that no one has heard this film, is because Tim Curry and Carmen Electra, amongst others, are in this film.
Yeah. We'll get to the cast. Let's really quickly cover. So it's an odd setting for a few reasons. One is Edmonton is not only a place that like people all over the world have not heard of. Like even most Americans know nothing about it.
Right.
Canadians know what it is, but it's not a city that anyone talks about.
Mm-hmm.
Even when domestic productions, like if you have a movie that's made by like a national film grant or whatever, you know, aspects of the Canadian film industry do exist, sure, they might happen all over. They might happen in some rural town. They might happen up north. They might be whatever. But when it comes to what you would kind of consider like the film industry, meaning the American film industry, right? Like the Hollywood film industry, movies are often shot in Canada, like Deadpool. They did all that in Vancouver. What was the big zombie?
Yeah, the zombie one was in
TV show that everyone's into. The Last of Us. They did all that around Calgary. So like,
oh, I was thinking about that show. Was it like iZombie or something? I think that was in Vancouver as well.
Oh, probably. Well, and they did Twilight around the area of Vancouver.
Oh,
yeah, that's all in that like kind of Pacific Coast areas.
Makes sense.
And so, and someone even made, there's a YouTube video of like Vancouver has never played itself. So you can often recognize it in movies, but they're never set in Vancouver. And I could not name to you any American productions that are ever set in Canada. Movies just do not happen here.
No.
I mean, I don't even know there's a lot of American movies set in Australia. Like, I know Hugh Jackman made that one, but I don't know.
Kangaroo Jack.
No, that's right. Yeah, there you go. Like, we probably have a Kangaroo Jack that I'm just forgetting.
Right, yeah.
Movies are never set in Canada. And so I was partially blown away because I was like, why is this American movie set in Canada? Like, who paid who off here?
Right.
And I did try to drill into this today, and I think it's debatable whether you would call this an American production, but it's also very muddy. So the director and co-writer, James Orr, he's a Canadian, but if you look at his credits, these are just American movies in the American film industry. So like he wrote Three Men and a Baby. He wrote Sister Act 2. He's kind of like a sequel-coded guy.
This all makes sense, more sense now.
He has directed some films. I didn't really recognize them, but they're all listed as like American productions.
Mm-hmm.
The companies that produced and distributed the film were based in Los Angeles, and one of them was also like went bankrupt the year after this movie came out.
Yeah. Does anyone on the production film have like, I don't know, any sort of ownership or stake in West Edmonton Mall or like...
So if you go to...
Was there a grant at the time? I have questions. I have so many questions.
I had the same question. So in the end credits, in the special thank you, like they thank the mall, they thank the stores in it, they thank the local sports teams probably because they let them use the imagery for free.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mention in the credits of the City of Edmonton Destination Marketing Fund and of Travel Alberta. So there had to have been some grant money, but there's just so little information available in the production because I totally get why you would have your city, your province create, like spend their grant money on making a movie that like makes the city and the mall seem cool.
For sure.
But I don't know how you get Tim Curry and Carmen Electra and Patrick Swayze into this movie.
Oh, that's the main guy. I was like, oh, he looks familiar.
Oh, I thought you'd actually like trawled the credits.
No, I wanted to keep as much of it. I Googled, is Tim Curry? Well, no, I asked my husband, is Tim Curry Canadian? And he's like, no, of course not. I was like, I didn't think so. And then I Googled the guy who I think was in Night of the Roxbury.
Yes.
Or in the SNL skit.
Both. Yeah. No, that is Chris Kattan. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not Canadian. And Carmen Electra, no. I was like, she has to be Canadian.
No. No.
No. So that's where the budget went, I think.
Yeah. So there's very, very little written on the production. There's like the Wikipedia talk page is blank. The Wikipedia page, there's an unsighted claim that the movie was exhibited theatrically in Canada, but was like otherwise direct to video.
Oh.
So that like, it's hard to call it an American production, but yeah, it's really baffling. But the main cast of the movie is largely non-Canadian. So going from the top of the cast, we have, I would say, at least former Hollywood A-lister Patrick Swayze starring as the father.
Uh-huh.
We have, so Rachel Hayward plays his wife. I don't recognize her, but she is American.
Okay.
There's also she doesn't have a huge part in the movie. There's this term, I'm blanking on it, but it's when you like kill a man's wife in a movie to kind of get her out of the movie and make the movie about him. It's called like fridging or something.
Oh, yeah. I know that there would be a term for it. Yeah.
In this movie, it's not like, oh, his wife is dead and he's a widow. It's just that she's stuck waiting for a plane the whole movie. And then she shows up at the end. Like they just kind of were like, well, we can't have a female character in this movie like that we don't need. Just get her out of here. I don't know. It's very strange.
I will say just quickly, this film does pass the Bechdel test.
Yes, it does. Yes. I pointed at the screen and I shouted it when I was watching it with my partner.
Amazing.
And then, so we have, so the oldest son, Cameron Bright, he is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Matthew Knight, he's the younger son.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, like these are child actors at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's definitely Canadian as well. The kids largely are Canadian.
Just... Quick note on that one. I suspected he was Canadian because at the start he's like, you can't even understand anything about what they're saying.
He was
trashing Canadians' accents. I'm like, I just heard it.
The older kid?
No, like the middle, like the younger son.
The younger kid, yeah. Yeah, and the older kid, I pegged him at the end because of the way he said life, so. There's not a lot of accent coaches on this movie, that's for sure.
Don't even get me started.
Yeah, so then the daughter was played by some twins. They don't have links to their names, so I don't think they
Twins.
became. Yeah, it's always twins when they're really young, right? Like that's why you had the Olsen twins and stuff because of like the labor laws.
Oh, about how like long a shift can be and stuff.
Yeah, like that's just how child acting has worked for a long time. You just get twins to play really young kids in movies so that you can like.
Cycle them through.
Yeah, pretty much. Otherwise, you would take forever to shoot because they have to have limited things. So like. I mean, good. It's better than working children like in the movie mines.
To the bone, yeah.
Then, yeah, we have, I would say, not quite A-lister, but former SNL also ran Chris Kattan playing one of the evil brothers and Preston Lacey from Jackass as his brother.
I knew I recognized him. I did not know where. Oh, that makes so much sense.
A rare dramatic, well, not dramatic, but a rare acting turn from Preston Lacey, who does not have a lot of film credits that do not have the word Jackass or Steve-O in the title.
Amazing. Baffling.
Yeah. Then we have pretty big name, Carmen Electra as their boss. We've got this old. So the guy who plays Santa, who kind of has this transatlantic sort of accent that seems to move around a lot. On Wikipedia, it just says born 11th April 1942, England, UK. We don't even have a city.
Beautiful.
But he's clearly has been in Canada for a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in Highlander. That's fun. And then, yeah, Tim Curry of Rocky Horror Picture fame.
This would have been like one of his last roles prior to having a stroke, right? Do you think?
Gotta be. Let's have. I'm just gonna control F stroke in the Tim. Curry has used a wheelchair since having a major stroke in July of 2012. So, certainly one of his later roles.
I say that 'cause like it was kind of spoiler. Tim Curry's character, you end up finding out he was kicked in the head by a horse.
Yeah. Oh, that is an
I was
unfortunate.
just like, ooh.
Yeah. So I was going to save this question for the end, but since we're on it, I'll ask now, because this is one of Patrick Swayze's final performances. So I think you are a person who I think has strongly held values and like a good moral compass. So you tell me if this joke is tasteless or not, and I can cut it out. Is it unreasonable to say that this movie gave Patrick Swayze cancer? Because he got a diagnosis like a couple months after it came out of stage four something.
Oh,
It is one
buddy.
of
Oh, no. The fact, because, I mean, I know that you're asking that as a joke, but I'm like, maybe, no.
Like I hate to, I try to be self-aware of my dark humor, but yeah, it is one of the. He was in Christmas in Wonderland, and he was in two movies that came out in 2008. So third last film role by release order.
Oof, oof. I mean, what? So do we
Let's put it
know?
this way: the movie didn't help. I don't think the movie helped his health.
No, it certainly was not a protective factor.
There's got to be a curse here because Tim Curry became sick years later. I don't think Chris Kattan's career ever went up from here. I don't think this was good for anyone's career, really, or health.
Oh no, and maybe like I feel like this is like the perfect thing that you do in your later years when you just like want a bit of a cash injection, right? Is like you kind of do this film that you know isn't going to get a wide release. You film for like a few days at West Edmonton Mall. I
Yeah.
guess it's like kind of, yeah, I don't know if it's a curse as much as it's like self-selecting, if that makes sense. But
Probably.
Tim
I
Curry is still
just.
so baffling. He could do whatever he
Yeah.
wanted.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and how much money could they have offered? I mean, the production companies, at least one of them, when I clicked on their Wikipedia link, it was like, this is a production company that specialized in low budget stuff.
I don't. What's going on?
That is the question I ask myself so many times. What is going on is just the question of this movie.
But yeah, this certainly did not help anyone.
And then we have the only other blue link here on Wikipedia is Mackenzie Porter. So she plays Shane, the love interest of Danny, the oldest son. So they have this family come down from the United States and they're hanging out at this mall in Canada. And this teenager, who is supposed to be from Los Angeles, even though the actor is Canadian, meets this girl and falls in love with her. Whoa, she's from Los Angeles too. Isn't that crazy? When I was watching it, I thought it makes sense that they probably, again, I'm thinking American production, they just carted whatever actors they wanted to hire out here and then just got like Canadian extras basically. Mm-hmm. But no, Mackenzie Porter, also Canadian, the actress who plays, the love interest, her brother won the second season of Canadian Idol. That's a fun piece of trivia.
So what I'm understanding very quickly is that like Australia, sort of like any type of media, entertainment, celebrity scene is like big country town vibes.
Yeah, that's been a big theme of our Strombo gimmick. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a sec. We also have, not listed in Wikipedia, but so the cop who is not Tim Curry, but he's kind of the next most main cop. He's the one who serves the warrant. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who...
His name isn't Rico.
Yeah, he's the one who like arrests Patrick Swayze's character initially. Mm-hmm. That is Donovan Workin, a local improv guy. He taught me improv when I was in grade school. Yeah, so people don't like my sense of humor. It's his fault.
So when you watched this film, were you primed for him to be in it? Or was that...
No, I just saw him and I was like, that's him. I did the Leo point at the TV because he's like a fun guy you can spot in occasional local productions.
Oh, that's so strange. That would have been just such a weird experience for you to watch this film.
Yeah, I mean, I used to be able to spot him on the news. I think he was a friend of one of the news guys. Mm-hmm. You could spot him in all these little like news vignettes they would do. He also, if you are maybe an Albertan, at least an Edmontonian theater fan, he played the starring role as then Alberta Premier Jason Kenney in the local 2022 musical Jason Kenney's Hot Boy Summer, a satirical examination of the lifting of COVID restrictions.
Oh.
And I actually tried to get him on the original incarnation of this show, doing our role playing and stuff. And so I got a hold of him through his website or whatever. And I didn't tell him they'd taught me improv. I just said like, hey, do you want to come on this show? And this is when he was doing this musical and he kind of had to defer because he's like, oh, we got more dates added. And it never panned out. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll just let it be. He'll never know. But I still had his number. And so I sent a text message to him for the first time in like 2 years yesterday. And I was like, hey, Donovan, let me read the text to him. He said, hey, Donovan, it's Kelly, a guy who invited you on a podcast once. I'm going to be recording an episode reviewing Christmas in Wonderland, the weird West Edmonton Mall movie you had a role in. I was hoping to ask you a relevant question. We currently have a gimmick on the show of connecting all of our Canadian content to national earth celebrity George Strombolopoulos. So in the interest of that, have you ever met Strombo or at least met people who have met him? Thanks for your time. He responded very quickly and said, hey, not sure. I don't think I've met him, but I'm sure I've met several people who know him. And I was like, all right, well, I'll try to figure it out. We're doing basically a 6 degrees of separation approach. So like, if you don't mind my asking, who might be a biggish name you've worked with that I could possibly draw a connection through? And he said, I've had a big day. Let me think about it. I'll text you tomorrow. And I was like, sure. And then he texted me like 10 minutes later. And so he's like, here's some names. Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, Tom Segura, Shane Gillis, Russell Peters. So for those of us following the gimmick at home, Donovan Workin, who plays the cop in this movie, has worked with Russell Peters, a Canadian comedian, who has been interviewed by George Strombolopoulos on his show. So we got there in two
minutes
from this movie.
There we go. That's good. We found it.
Yeah. So very kind of him to help. Shout out to him. I think he was also good in this movie, but I'm biased.
Look, his saving grace is that he didn't have a lot of lines.
None of the actors were given much to work with script-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like me to go over the plot?
Yeah. Now that we've covered the cast, let's get into the plot. So Josie has graciously created a plot summary for us. Hey, everyone. Sorry to cut in, but this one ran a lot longer than expected, so I'm cutting it in half. We'll be back with in-depth coverage of the movie next week. Normally, this is where we would allow the guests to plug themselves, tell you where to check them out. At present, Josie does not want to be checked out or plugged, so don't do either of those things. But as always, if you enjoyed this episode, join the Discord, support the Patreon. Here's the outro.
Porn Under Punches is a collaborative effort between me, Kelly Gomo, and a variety of contributors to create a variety of shows. If you want to support the project, you can do so by following us and our friends on our various socials. Check out the episode description for all the relevant links, especially this one. Patreon.com/pornunderpunches. No E in punches. By supporting us on Patreon, you can enable this show to sustain itself and produce regular episodes. Join at the basic tier for expanded access to our Discord server, donate at an elevated level for monthly bonus content, or even fund us at the highest amount. And once a month, I will draw anything you ask me to on an index card. And hey, if money's an object, word of mouth goes a long, long way.
Blue, blue, what a pop. Oh, how she loves the Stanley Cup. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go. Listen, listen to what I say. Play that game the Canadian way. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go.
Any sources used in the episode you just heard can also be found in the description. This content was primarily produced in Amiskwitsiwaskaykan, the traditional territory of the Nahiwak, Nakota, Niitsitapi, Nakawe, Métis, and other nations, also known as Edmonton, Alberta, in Western Treaty 6 territory. Thanks for listening, and happy trails to you.